Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mao.
And I'm Cho Minardi.
Today we bring you a conversation that my colleague Taylor Antrim and I had with the extremely charming and so talented actor Andrew Scott.
Oh,
he probably, for better or for worse, is best known for his role as the hot priest in Fleabag. But as you will soon see from our conversation, he has been in so many other things, both on stage and screen. And Taylor was swooning as much as I was.
Oh, I love him. I mean, I loved Fleabag. And he was at the GQ Awards in London, GQ Man of the Year Awards. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge gave the most glowing speech about him. And he just seems like he's just a wonderful person to work with. And yeah, it was a really touching moment. So I'm also jealous that you were able to talk to him.
We spoke to him when he was in New York, and he was doing press for his new film, which just came out in theaters, All of Us Strangers, with the gorgeous and fabulous Paul Mescal. He also recently shot Ripley, which is a spinoff of The Talented Mister, that is coming to Netflix sometime in the new year. And I have to say, All of Us Strangers is just extremely gut-wrenching, but really poignant and romantic. Andrew and Paul play neighbors who become lovers. It's also a sort of peon to family and loss and regret and the conversations we wish we could have had with our loved ones. So it's, I recommend it, but bring Kleenex.
Yeah, I've heard a few people have recommended to me, but also said bring Kleenex.
Also, Andrew just finished a one-man version of Vanya in the West End, where he played every part, just the physical exertion that must have taken every night. I can't even imagine. But it was fun to talk to him about that as well.
Yeah, I'm so sad I missed it. It was closing just as I was arriving in London.
Well, you can see the movie instead.
So tell me, what did he wear to come to see to the Vogue offices?
Oh, he looked so fabulous. He kind of looked Ripley-esque. He was wearing this like cashmere button-down polo cardigan and white suede loafers. Shoma, you know how I feel about loafers.
White suede loafers in New York.
That's what I said. I said
winter?
they were car shoes. He was going car to car, door to door.
Not a walking clearly situation. Clearly not stomping the streets of downtown.
No, not at all. But you know what? They looked good. They were Louboutins.
Well, I'm excited to hear this conversation.
What do you like to do in New York when you visit?
Walk.
Okay. Not in those.
Not in these shoes. I like to walk around. I'm a big walker in London, actually, as well. I live pretty centrally in London. And that's how you get to see a city. I mean, I would normally go to the theater, but where I'm scheduled like a young pop star, child pop star, being ferried around.
What were your big events? I saw you went to the Gotham Awards.
Yes, we went to the Gotham Awards.
Beautiful Prada situation.
Oh, yeah, a bit of a Prada situation. I really love clothes. Mm-hmm. And I love color. So yeah, it was just it's a strange thing having to wear lots of different types of clothes and wear them only once. I think there's something that we have to look at in relation to that. I love color, and I really embrace the fact that now men are allowed to wear color, because it does get a little bit boring just wearing black tie.
I think,
and when I'm not a big fan of a tie.
Mm.
Don't love wearing a tie.
No, that's fine.
Is that all right?
I think it's okay.
I think ties, I mean, they're poised for a comeback, I would say. Not a lot of ties around.
Yeah.
And when you wear one, talk about feeling a little subversive. Feel like you're sort of freaking people out. If you
like
put a tie on.
Like a little tiny tie, I don't mind. Because I'm a smaller gentleman. I don't like those. Do you remember those big, huge massive,
very wide ties. Wide ties.
Yeah. That's not a good look for me.
But
yeah.
if you have a tiny tie, you have to have the right collar, which I was told. Because I had like a spread collar once and a narrow, one of those sort of Band of Outsiders ties, and someone told me it was all wrong.
Right.
And that's always stuck with me.
You need a little tiny little collar. Yeah. I like old tiny clothes I can wear. I always know. Sort I'm like, if it's tiny, that'll fit. That'll work.
Well, I do want to. I mean, I love the film, and I want to talk to you about it. But I thought maybe we could start. I have a theory I want to run by you. We are both men in our 40s.
Yes,
and I think that one
should
is
be
best.
Good.
One, yeah. Chloe's so excited. One is best equipped to handle attention and fame when one is a little older.
Yes.
And what I found, I discovered you when you were in the second season of Fleabag.
How are you handling fame?
This is really about me. I know, the whole theory is really about me. I'm poised to enjoy fame any moment.
Well, after this airs, I think you should hire yourself a whole
bets
team.
Are off.
All right, the run through will be back in just a moment.
Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult, to how to create a workout routine that works for you, to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and a luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. And we're back.
You became a bit of a phenomenon with that second season of Fleabag. And I just wonder what that was like.
I never felt when I was not well known that I was failing in a sense. And now that I'm a bit more well known, I don't feel like I've sort of made it in that sense. And so I was really, really obsessed with kind of, without sounding like worthy about it, but I was really interested in getting to become a good actor. Mm. And if I'm honest, I think I have to give myself a little bit of a pat on the back about that, because there actually were opportunities in my 20s where I could have, my profile could have been, you know, higher or whatever, and the bank balance could have been a little bit better.
Right.
But I don't know, you have to look at what's of actual value, and sometimes putting yourself in a TV series that's of a certain standard, but not great standard. Yeah. You would be contracted for 5 years in your 20s or your 30s. For me, that always just felt like it was actually closing doors rather than opening them for me. And of course, your profile, which is the thing that people measure actor success on, increases. But that's not necessarily the thing that I've measured my success on. So even though, of course, at some point you want to go, I want to be able to buy my parents dinner. I had absolutely no cash, and I wanted to be able to, you know, live a little bit of a life. So I feel like you have to surf that. And I've always been quite ferocious in kind of decision making, even in my early 20s. I think because I needed acting so much to sort of examine myself, it was such a savior for me.
Really?
That I really wanted to be able to explore things in my work that probably in my early 20s I wasn't particularly comfortable with exploring in my personal life, you know? So work that was sort of authentic and meaningful to me was really important, and much more important than anything else.
And maybe challenging too. You seem like someone who is not afraid of a challenging you know, role and maybe is drawn to it. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most actors would tell you that.
The challenge thing makes me think of Vanya. I haven't seen it, but there was the talk of the office at Vogue.
Sounds exhausting. You play all the characters.
The characters.
Yeah.
And that seems to me, was that the hardest thing you've ever taken on?
No, the hardest thing I ever took on was Hamlet. Because Hamlet was, we did a 4-hour version of it and we did it 150 times and it's in iambic pentameter and it's totally exhausting. We did it about 5 years ago and I literally got over it about last week.
Jeez.
No, it's that's really hard. And so after you do that, everything seems more possible. Having said that, Vanya was a crazy idea to do this version of it. It's one man. On his own, me.
Yeah.
Well, speaking in the third person. We did. It was 2 hours, and it was an awful lot. In fact, it kind of gut punched me afterwards. I got very, physically. And after you do 8 shows a week on a show like that, afterwards, because everything else in your life has to slightly go on the back burner.
Yeah.
And so, because you're like, well, I've got 2 shows today. I can't, pay that bill. I can't do the, or emotionally go to places because you have to keep yourself for the audiences. And then so when it's over, your serotonin levels are just incredibly low and physically, because the body, as they say, keeps the score and your body's like, okay,
I'm done.
Is there like almost like a physical fitness thing you have to do to be able to keep up with that pace?
A little bit, yeah. I think you have to. It's extraordinary.
What's the Vanya workout regimen?
Yeah, totally.
exactly. It's crying in the morning.
It's a lot of beats.
Exactly. Thinking about Moscow. you do. I think, physical exercise is something that I find very helpful anyway.
Mm.
But it's really weird when you're in a play, you carry the play. You're only doing it you're only at the theater for maybe 3 or 4 hours in the evening. But you carry it around with you all day. And I used to wake up in the morning and think, oh my God, I can't do that again. I can't. But it was really brilliant, I really believe, I don't believe in like high art and low art, really. I love the, Chekhov is incredibly funny.
Yeah.
And I
really
wanted it to be funny. And I really wanted it for the audience to get what Chekhov means. And so it was very sort of playful in that sense.
And I think there's going to be a film version that the
they've recorded
NT
it for
it.
Oh,
that's
Live.
Exciting.
Yeah, so that's
it's
amazing.
Like your Taylor Swift eras.
It's exactly. It's Chekhov Andrew's version. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, speaking of crying and sex scenes, I was watching All of Us Strangers, it is just wrenching. And I wonder, what is hardest? Is it hardest to do a sobbing scene or to do a sex scene? What takes the most toll out on you or what is the most exciting?
What's the most vulnerable making?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I suppose you have different fears. I don't find... with the vulnerable stuff in it, and obviously had to bring a lot of my own, I suppose pain is the word, to the story. But that to me is just such a pleasure.
It's why you do it. Right?
It's why you do it, and the fact that I would be able to express that and for people to be helped or seen in some way by it is extraordinary to me, because I never thought that would ever be the case for me. And then the physical side of it, the nakedness is, that's hard.
I mean, just to catch people up, this is a film about a screenwriter. You play a screenwriter in sort of a lonesome London high-rise.
Yeah.
And you fall into a sort of love affair with a neighbor, played by Paul Mescal,
Paul Mescal,
Chloe Doris has seen him in exactly one movie.
Don't care.
He's extraordinary.
I've seen him in everything. He's great.
Yeah.
What I thought watching it, I remember seeing it at the New York Film Festival. I'm really interested in the director's work, Andrew Hay. I thought this is a very personal story of his. And I thought to myself, talking to you, I thought, okay, well, you're stepping into someone's quite personal story.
Mm.
And so what was that like? How do you make the role something personal to you?
Yeah.
Or do I have it wrong about Andrew? I mean,
no,
it just
you have it absolutely right.
Yeah.
I think of it like a marriage between his story and mine.
Mm.
We shot it in his childhood home.
I read that, yeah.
Which is extraordinary.
I know, that's amazing.
And, in this suburban home. And so when somebody sort of throws down the gauntlet like that to say, I'm bringing...
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be like to go back to my childhood home when I was 9 or 10 years old. Even the smell of the place, or the aspect or the perspective looking out into the garden, And to have this crew kind of come in and create the story is so wonderful to me. So that just made me just feel like, well, if he's offering that up as well as this beautiful sort of personal tender script, I've got to bring my own stuff. So you create right. something and you sort of intermingle our own experiences. The big challenge of it, to be honest, was to how do you go back to a childish place where you get the sense that this man has sort of regressed into childhood as he's talking to his parents, who in the film are played by Jamie Bell and Claire Foy, who are younger than me. Mm. We meet them at a time when he kind of conjures them back. We talk to them as they were when he lost them when right. he was 11, and they were maybe in their 30s.
So you're almost enacting the boy.
Exactly.
Because they died in a car crash yeah. and when yeah. he was young. So
And to try not to be too specific about it and how he has to sort of let them know about his own life as yeah. it's come and how he's an adult now. And so he has to tell them about himself, and he has to tell them about the world as it is now, and he has to spend time with them. And really just what I think the film is about is about somebody who is in kind of purgatory on their own and needs to be seen and loved by his parents in order for him to love.
Yeah.
It's about, to love and to be loved. That's what we all want to do. So it's incredibly tender and very... I think it's incredibly beautiful and a very sort of audacious, imaginative idea.
It's kind of a lonesome movie. It's about loneliness to a degree.
Yeah.
And there's so much, like, TikTok is, like, fueled by loneliness right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen these sort of trends. People love enacting their loneliness on TikTok and it yeah. goes viral.
Really?
Yes, yes. And
filming
it seemed
themselves.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Oh, so sad.
Like a Mitski song suddenly becomes top of the charts because everyone is putting this, like, sad yeah. sounding song on yeah. TikTok and it's popping. Anyway, so it seemed very of the moment and it's great. And I imagine everyone would like to imagine themselves having a love affair with Paul Mescal, too. So that
absolutely.
Works.
I also want to know, I have dreams of what do Andrew and Paul do during filming? Like, what was your hanging out off time? Did you cook together?
Did we cook together? Wow.
I don't know. When I talked to all the ladies who did The Lost Daughter, they had such great stories about when they were filming together. They all cooked and had rosé every night. Olivia Colman she told me,
yeah, that sounds like Olivia Colman,
yeah.
right? Yeah, that sounds, yeah, yeah. Well, that we did not cook together. We had Haribo, Tangfastics.
Right. There you go.
We probably drank together.
Okay.
Yeah. But, during the filming, we had not a lot of time to film it. We were filming it in North London, in West London. But I absolutely adore Paul. He's a really hard worker.
Mm.
Mm.
I love that in actors. Because somebody who really cares and wants to be there. And he saw something in that character, which is a supporting character. And he's interested in acting and getting it right. And sometimes when you're talking about these films, you never actually get the chance to sort of say how hard these people like Paul work. And so what did we do? Well, it's more in the, we've just been starting this, our promotional duties for them.
Oh, yeah, you're doing your sort of a duo press tour?
Yes, we have been doing that, yeah. So we've got...
His outfits for press tours, I have to say.
He's really stylish boy.
Oh, such a stylish boy.
Yeah, yeah. we've got...
Are you guys coordinating your outfits?
We are. We have
Are your stylists in touch?
I don't know if that's the thing. I think we just have a sort of weird, similar... I don't know what the hell's
going on. Witchy power.
Witchy power. We're telepathically linked, but we've gone sort of slightly feral in our promotional tour. Everybody's like, okay, calm down, boys.
I was talking to an actress who was at Vogue just yesterday, actually, and she has a big role coming out in 2024, and she talked about this thing she did to get the part, which is a chemistry read. Now, I've heard about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done a chemistry read, and did you have to do one with Paul?
No.
Thank
God. We didn't.
It strikes me as the most awkward sounding thing I can imagine.
Well, they shouldn't call it a chemistry read. What it means is an audition.
Yeah.
And they're trying to see if the two of you have chemistry. And then if you don't get it, it's like, oh, wow.
A lack of chemistry read.
Yeah, exactly. Chemistry-free read. So that's what it is. It's like, do you have a sort of, like a sexy vibe between you? Like, I think it's slightly...
Yikes.
Slightly old school, but like
yeah.
I have done them in the past. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've done that thing where you go in and you're in the in you've already been cast, and then they bring in five people to read opposite you,
wow.
And it's always it's very informative actually. And actually, ultimately, what it led me to believe was that nobody really cares what you think of the script. When you come in and go, what do you think of the script?
Oh, they always ask you that.
Yeah, that's really, what do you think of the script? Like, you're not going to say, it wasn't really for me. Although then some people, I remember one time an actor did say that. They're like, I don't really like it. And then you're just like, wow, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
It's just sort of arrogant. But it's like sometimes when you're doing press, it's an unusual thing because you're saying like, well, what first drew you to the script? No one would ever say, well, I had serious doubts or I had a mortgage to pay or, you know, people don't really, you know, I don't know if you find that like talking to people, but do you find it like, you know, having to ask the same questions, do you find that oppressive sometimes? Or?
Well, absolutely. And I think one just doesn't do it. I think the inexperienced people do it.
Well, it's a difficult thing. It's an unusual thing because sometimes the publication that you're talking to is very respectful, but then there's like other tributary articles and something is taken out and then that becomes something else and something else. And then
dreaded Daily Mail spinoff.
Right, exactly. And then there's a thing.
Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, it happens on every interview that you do. That's something, you know, mercifully, I don't have that kind of scrutiny on me, but definitely things that you think, oh, that's completely, or something that becomes a headline that you think that was just literally a passing thing. A really brilliant actress said to me once that you should, in an interview, dare to be bland, which is probably not. terrible advice for you guys. But I think, it's a tricky thing because obviously you want to have a nice time and it's an interchange, isn't it? It's sometimes just the seedier elements of things that you have to just sort of protect yourself against.
I want to know what culture Andrew is consuming this season. Like, and actually I heard a formative moment for you as a young man was reading a Barbara Streisand biography.
Come on.
Yes.
That's true. Yes. And then it just, the 900 page tome just came out.
I got a book for you?
Have I got a book for you?
Have you read it?
No, I have not. Yes. I have
because
not yet.
Because she does the audiobook and it is quite a treat.
That's special.
I mean, forget
Have you done it?
Forget Hamlet, doing that audiobook.
I was listening. Our culture writer is a longtime Barbara fan and she's been playing it for everyone, and it is just a real Barbara delight.
It's a little bit of a cliche, but I do love a bit of Streisand. I mean, look, the talent is there. Why am I defending this?
You shouldn't be.
The talent is there. Oh my God, it's sort of extraordinary.
I also heard that you're a big Esther Perel fan.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with
Esther Perel. Oh, tell us about that.
Oh my God.
I
genuinely think that Esther Perel is a hero of our time.
I agree.
I think the way that she talks about human relationships and human sexuality is so compassionate and wise. I feel like she's not anti either sex. I think she has a way of constructing a sentence that's just sort of unbelievable, you know, to listen to. And I just love what she says about the way love manifests itself. And, you know, her sort of dismissal of those kind of tropes that we hear, like deal breaker, that would be a deal breaker. And then just that the seeming nature of relationships is to be looked at. And or just her lack of judgmentalness, I think is...
I mean, that's the thing. It's so hard in the culture right now to find someone who's wise and not... or who is magnetic to listen to or read and is also not giving you delicious judgments to kind of spin out on. Because that's what most of our sort of consumption is about, judging this, judging that. And she doesn't do that.
Yeah, it just feels like, I think what we're really missing in the culture slightly is to be able to ask questions and to be able to listen. And I really notice, I've kind of devoured a lot of her stuff.
Yeah.
The way she listens to people and she has a very considered answer to many things. And I think to have somebody who's able to speak without sensationalism is really important in our culture. And I love couples therapy as well on Showtime.
Yeah, that show's great. My wife loves that show.
Does she?
I'm like, all right.
And do you guys watch it together?
No.
Yeah,
They watch separate TV with headphones on next to each other.
Do you really?
Swear to God.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on a second.
Doesn't everyone
do this? No one else does this except you guys.
You have separate TV with headphones on.
We've been married a long time. We're very happily together. But there is something about the pressure of finding things that you both are going to enjoy at the same speed.
Yeah.
And we just, there are a few things that we enjoy. But for the most part, she really likes her, like, you know, British reality shows and her Bravo shows, which I can't hang with.
Watch, yeah.
I do like my squash TV subscription.
Do you mean like actual squash playing the sport squash?
The sport squash, yeah.
Wow. I thought it was like butternut.
No.
Oh my
no.
God, incredible. No.
You said
that fitness was important to you.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, and so is butternut squash.
Okay.
That's fair. Why I wanted to decide.
And when we go for a walk, we talk about what we've been watching and fill each other in. It's cute.
Yeah, that is cute.
Esther Perel, come on the
Wait,
pod.
What
tell
TV
me,
shows
tell
are
me what
you,
I'm doing wrong.
What TV shows are you watching, Andrew?
What TV shows am I?
Any Crown for you?
I'm about to get into the Crown. Okay. Once we get rid of it, because we're literally been, the schedule on this has been crazy. So I haven't really watched anything. I have to get back into Drag Race UK because that's you know, a big thing for me. See, it's movie time at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of all the
What movies have you loved?
Past Lives.
Oh, Past Lives.
I haven't seen, so all the ones I want to see in May, December, Maestro.
Yeah.
I love Past Lives. We had Greta on a few months ago, and
special?
She's fabulous, and it's
oh my
just
God,
spectacular.
I love her.
And we had her in the magazine too. Everyone's fallen in love with Greta.
She's
Lee.
Just so.
Have you been in anything with her?
No, not yet.
You guys seems like I would watch that. Whatever that project is.
We hung out a couple of weeks ago and
strikes over.
So
let's get on it.
Yeah, let's get absolutely get on it. I'm actually very happy not to act for a little while. I think he can sort of act too much.
Okay.
I've been acting my socks off. Shh, Andrew.
What are you doing when you're not acting? I know people have this sort of dream of you and Phoebe Waller-Bridge sort of dancing around London together, but like, is that what is the sort
that's,
of
that's not far from the truth.
What are you doing when you're not acting, and is Phoebe playing a role in that like we're all imagining?
Yeah, she is actually. Yeah I suppose, what do? Well, I go back to Dublin a little bit because my family are there, so I go there when I can, but I suppose I just go out for dinner and just see all the people that I love.
It was really fun, and I loved the film.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Really fun.
So that's it for the run-through.
Bye. Happy New Year.
The run-through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demi monde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.